Yeah, support us on the Thursday show too, where we come over and talk about stuff, mostly tournaments. I'd say about a good 95% tournaments.
with 5 minutes of Fuego at the end.
Horseback scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beelzebub Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hi, everybody.
Adam Camilleri and Red Powell.
Oh, I thought you were going to go, Adam. But okay.
Hi, everybody. I'm flipping it on its head, baby. Let's mix it up. It's the anniversary something or other. Yay.
Breaking the rules. The cadence of the show, that's okay. You guys have earned it. Yeah, we're 9 years deep into podcasting. You know, it's like, so really appreciate everyone that has been here the entire time. We appreciate all the new listeners. Appreciate everyone that's left us some 5-star reviews. And really appreciate everyone that's, you know, felt the calling to pick up a t-shirt or two or a sticker or something from the link in the show notes.
Are you bringing any of these t-shirts with you to Adepticon?
I'll be wearing mine at least once.
Can you bring one for me?
Yeah, what about me? Can you
bring red? They're actually print on demand from Teespring. You have to get them. Yeah.
Well, here's the demand.
You know. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, get the printing. It's like...
well, unlike these scrubs, I actually ordered my own. So.
Nice. Eldari, the talk of the land. Harlequin specifically. Like, it's
people are pretty hyped about it.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, basically wanted to unrest the power of the custodies that are out there, which is weird. Like, the custodies... also a dominant force. I'll be honest. I kind of like where the ecosystem with the Warhammer 40,000 is at the moment.
Look,
I think Adam doesn't agree.
Yeah.
I don't think it's far off, despite my usual doomsaying and whatever. It's not far off. You're not wrong. It's just that we've reached kind of a new paradigm, a new level of strength in codexes. That, and the only fear is that it supersedes all that have come before it. Like, there's a joke we have on the Thursday show. It's called the Golden Cliff, because for about a good like 6 weeks after the Custodes book came out, they were the number one faction at every tournament we looked into or analyzed, and then they would go off a golden cliff, and then the next faction would be like half the number. The fear is that will happen, but it will be 3 or 4 factions and then a big cliff and then the rest, because those factions will just feel a bit left behind. And I guess the fear that I have is that a lot of those factions will be factions that already have a 9th edition codex, a la, are not due to get something to bring them up to that level.
Yeah, for especially like a couple of years or something, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if they're, say, in the realm of Sisters. And don't get me wrong, I think Sisters is a phenomenal faction, extremely deep, has got a lot of play. But it's not quite at that Eldari, Tau, or Custodes level, and they have had 2 supplements. So the likelihood of them getting any future content in order to bridge that gap is, you know, questionable. I mean, they could technically get an army of renown, because that's one thing they don't have. But, you know, that's kind of some of the naysaying and fears in the back of my skull. But
with some of the stuff is like, the company has proven they'll be kind of aggressive with balance.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, updates. And like, I'm not predicting anything whatsoever, but if there truly are some lagging factions in this kind of like release cycle that you're talking about, I don't think it'd be too far removed to expect, you know, some type of update in that.
Yeah, well, they've done the balanced data slate will be going a huge way into keeping the show on the road, so to speak. And that is a nice little entendre to go into the GW Roadshow being announced as well, that they're going to be back bigger and better than ever with yourself at the helm, my good man, Paul.
Oh, that'd be nice. I'm really looking forward to that.
So what, they've announced how many events? And they're in brand new locations as well.
The U.S. Open Series events were largely in like southern states. This is going to be a little bit of the West Coast, a little Midwest type cities. So hopefully open it up to folks that can make it that maybe wouldn't have been able to make it before.
That's right. I just pulled up the list. So this year we've got Seattle, San Diego, Santa Ana, Pueblo, New Mexico, Kansas City, and Chicago. So that's extremely
exciting. So New Mexico is going to be the finals. Seattle is coming up the soonest. So get tickets for that. thanks for bringing it up, because I think there's some, still some tickets available for folks that want to come, that may be able to come join us there in May.
Yeah, and for anybody who didn't like check it out, by all means, jump onto Twitch, look up the coverage from the season just gone, and you'll see where things are going to be starting off. And that was the first season, the one just gone. So, you know, as awesome as the inaugural one is, it's usually coverage-wise, entertainment-wise, it's usually the worst one. So expect a lot of the kinks to be ironed out, things to be... Well, it's just the fact of us doing these things for the first time.
Yeah. And then, so with this, some of this is like you can get... You can win a trip to the finals with your performance in some of the non-final events. And I've seen some pictures of the final, like the final location, and it's pretty spectacular.
Exciting.
Yeah, just scenic views or whatever. But, you know, like I'm kind of excited because I've never been to some of these cities before. I've never been to Tacoma/Seattle.
That's, yeah, what a fantastic reason to explore.
Yeah. I mean, I want to know what kind of food's there. I want to hang out with some of the local players. I want to see if it's as rainy as everyone says it is.
It is.
I like it.
You just like immediately walk out the door and you're drenched. It's a special type of rain.
I want to have a Starbucks in the home of Starbucks. I don't know if that's exciting or not, but you know.
I like Seattle as a city. I feel like it has a lot of style, if that makes sense. It's very cool.
I was there for in 2020, just for everything, the whole world was swallowed by the warp. But I'm a big fan. I actually quite like Seattle. I spent about a week in the center of the city. I had a great time. Yeah.
If you didn't make it to the series last year, as Adam was talking about, you definitely want to make it out. This is, it's a community sense. The games are fun. You have, there's typically like hangout events that you get to hang out with staff, with other players, talk about themed Warhammer stuff after the games are over with. It is truly an experience, and I'm looking forward to being a part of it this year. Green, of course, in the live content, but also meeting and hanging out with everyone.
Can I get real for a minute?
Yeah.
All right. So everybody knows G-Dub used to run games days. They were hugely involved with the community. They used to do so many incredible things. Golden Demon, Ard Boys, you name it. They used to do it, and they were involved. They had their finger on the pulse, and it was incredible. And then they stopped, and they completely stopped. And for all of 6th edition, 7th edition, we were in the dark, flailing, trying to find our way. And now they're back. Do not let them go again. Buy a ticket. Go support it. Tell them you love it. Get involved. And we can all, you know, trot onto into the sunset together. It'd be a fantastic future.
So the U.S. Open in Seattle is May 6th through the 8th. That may actually be, without any hyperbole, the furthest north I've ever been.
Really? So you stepping off the plane, you can say Sam's line.
One more step. It'd be the furthest I've ever been from Hobbiton or the Shire.
Yeah.
No, it may be the furthest north I've ever been. I don't know where the parallel, like where it runs with like London and Ireland and stuff, but I feel like it's further north. Say May 6th to the 8th, come check it out. You will not regret it. It is just hopefully the folks that experienced the series events this last year can echo that and contribute to that, but it's going to be a fun time. You do not want to miss this type of stuff. The display that's on, the hobby that's on display, the games you're going to have, some of the best players in the world with some of the best looking models in the world playing the best game in the world.
Cannot wait, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up. And then, you know, come to the finals. I mean, just check out, if you can, some of the pictures in the Warhammer community article that show off where the finals are going to be. It is amazing.
It's going to be one of a kind.
Yeah. Totally worth doing. And look, also, if you happen to be hearing this, hopefully you see us at Adepticon next week. Speaking
Please
of
come
events,
say hello.
Yeah.
And tell us who your favorite host is. Don't do that.
Tell them it's me, because I'm not going to be there.
The only one who's not there. That's fair. I mean, me, Red, and Paul just having dinner. Like 12 guys walk up. You guys are all right. But Tanya, like...
Tanya's what's up?
Holds the whole thing together.
If you guys all go out to dinner, can you like blow up a balloon and draw a face on it?
Yeah.
And like, and it can like be a stand-in for me?
I'll do that. With the power of like editing foot, you know, apps, you can be everywhere.
You're just going to deep fake me in?
There you go.
All right.
Adepticon
is vicariously through my deep fake.
Yeah, Adepticon is one of those events that, you don't want to miss. And I've said this for years, and I'll continue to say it. It's one of the closest things to a convention that we have in our hobby. There will be probably thousands of players there. Thousands of, not just Warhammer, but of all games there. Going to be a fantastic opportunity to kind of like live in the hobby for a weekend. Mm. And Kill Team Live is going to be there.
See, somebody said this to me, and the image I had in my head was just like, nom. Kill Team Live. Like, what, we're just going to kill each other?
Well, so you're playing, it's laser tag. No, so you got your blasters, yeah? Your taggers, and you're playing in a laser tag environment where you have to complete objectives. That's so it's not just blasting your opponents. It is not just, you know, tagging or scoring points off of that stuff, but you also have to complete the objectives. It is very much the missions in the game, in the live game, are based off the missions in the tabletop game.
Can we throw down against another, like...
Yes.
Can we?
Yes.
How many players per team?
Number one, I'll say there's no other podcast as good at us at Laser Tag.
There's no other podcast that's allowed to, because they're just not on the level.
No, they can play, they're just not winning.
Oh, that's fair, yeah. I'll rely on Red to just, like, Rambo them stealth. Just actually just take him out, Red.
Lay down actual tactics and plans. Yeah.
Rub yourself in mud, lie on the floor.
Well, Adam and I and myself are getting just absolutely tagged into oblivion.
Destroyed.
Wondering what's happening.
Red's gonna bring his Tanith cloak.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
I'll go all Sergeant Cole on it, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll be sleeveless.
Well, I mean, obviously. Okay.
Obviously.
But this is getting better. We should keep going.
You play like the Astra Militarum side plays with Lasgun replicas. And the orc side plays with shooter replicas, and the shooters are unique. Like each one of them looks a little bit different, and they've got a fair amount of weight to them. You feel like you're carrying around something, an instrument of war from the 31st millennium.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
If you want an easy win, I will forfeit if I'm forced to use the orc weapon.
I agree. None of that here.
Well, here's the interesting thing: is the orc weapon, the weapons have different stats.
Yeah.
So the orcs are a little bit beefier, like hit point wise, but take a little bit longer to reload. And the humans are a little bit, I guess, I don't want to say weaker, but flimsier and reload a little bit faster.
That's what they think.
Yeah, you gotta get hurt for it to beat. Yeah, that's assuming that you get hit.
Yeah,
but you're playing with objectives. And their objectives placed throughout the arena. There's smoke. There's blaring Warhammer 40,000 music. It's pretty fun. I played a few games, obviously. So I have I can relate or relay what I'm talking about. But it's an experience, and that's one of the things you can do at some of these live events over the course of the year.
What we do is we recruit one of those life size Space Marine cosplayers, and then just get that guy to just juggernaut through all the walls for us, and we'll just run him behind.
Okay, but like, if you had to issue a challenge to any other podcast to meet you at the arena, who would be like your ultimate? Like, who would you just absolutely love to play against?
Another podcast? That's a good one, because there's so many good folks out there that I would love to just blast them into oblivion.
Well, maybe we all can say one, because mine would be Mob Rules. I think that the Mob Rules guys would be strong hilarious choice to play against.
Those dudes are so huge, though. It's actually fantastic for us. They're so tall, they can't hide behind anything. It's awesome. All right, I'll take that.
Nice. How about the 40K Badcast? Let's get in there and mix it up so they we can hear how salty they are on their next... There's no reality in which we don't win, by the way.
So much confidence.
Look, we got...
Does it have to be just podcast, or could I say, like, I think in Art of War, like, if there was one way that I was going to figure out how to win against the Art of War guys, I'd take that opportunity.
Yeah. You know how competitive they are as well? If we challenged, they wouldn't be able to say no.
They couldn't say no.
They'd have to take
Let's
it.
Let's just do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
That's actually a reality. I know a lot of them will be there. We could do an FDM versus Art of War and post...
This is the official like challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Art of War.
And when we post our victory all over social media. This is fun, by the way. Not the trash talk. The trash talk, of course, is fun, but I mean the game itself is fun. It is totally worth doing. I don't know that it'll be at all the U.S. Open Series events, but it'll certainly be a feature throughout. So watch for it. If you can't get to Adepticon this coming up weekend, watch for it to be something to do. And if you are at a place where it is available, I highly suggest try to prioritize and make some time to do it. If you are a Warhammer Plus subscriber, you can play for free. Otherwise, it's like $10.
Sweet.
Yeah, totally worth it. So anyway, we're talking about the U.S. Open Series. Come hang out with us if you can. If it's the right decision to go out, get out to some of these events, you will not be disappointed. It is meeting people, meeting these faction experts and stuff that we talk about. You know, they're all going to show up to these types of things. I think that tournaments and events are something that we haven't necessarily been able to do as much as we want to do, but they are the natural extension of the hobby. So if you've just gotten into Warhammer 40,000 or tournament curious, this may be a good time to get out and see what's up.
And it's so much more than just these GW events especially are so much more than just playing a bunch of games. They are about connecting with each other, about finding like-minded people, community growth, finding people in your local towns, especially if one of these events comes to your town, like, go. You will never meet more people from your town that you want to play games with.
That's a fair point. Anybody gearing up for events? What's everybody working on right now?
I am working on my Dark Angels still for Adepticon. I've actually made a decision to not make any content for my Dark Angels stuff yet. I don't know, we talked about me. I was going to do a blog or a vlog, like detailing my trying yep. to become
I'm gonna
number
film
one.
You. I'm just going to make you talk about it when we get together.
Let's do it. Just put me on stream. I realize I make enough content. I do enough. I'd rather just leave the gameplay to be my enjoyment for a little while and then see what I want to do with it, which I think is fair. I don't think anybody will besmirch me that. But, yeah.
No, this stuff's got to be fun. You got to stay grounded. You got to keep – got to recharge those batteries in between things. So completely respect that.
What about everybody else? What are you guys doing?
So not this weekend, but the weekend after, I'm actually teaching a – like miniature painting 101, like a beginner intro to miniature painting class. It's my first time ever doing that. The imposter syndrome is hitting me extremely, extremely hard. But I'm forcing myself to do this anyway, because I think it would be a good learning experience for myself as well. And I signed up for a charity Age of Sigmar tournament in June. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really enjoying Age of Sigmar. I think I got really burnt out on Warhammer 40K because I have a bit of a reading comprehension issue. So it just takes a lot of studying and stuff for me to keep up with all of the 40K rules and stuff. And I'm just sort of getting tired and falling out of love with like the competitive side of 40K because of it. So I'm just taking a break, going to AOS for a while and playing 40K like a little bit more narratively. I'll be doing some Crusade and stuff.
Really, it's just about moving the models around.
Yeah.
The way that gives us pleasure, you know, kind of thing. So,
I mean, I think I see where you're coming from, but I also know that you have an amazing brain for this and you've played for a really long time. And nobody in my area really like plays casually that allows me to just like move models around the table and have fun. Like it's very intense around here. So I just need to have a little 40K break, I think.
I can respect that. And with me, you know, I try to stay, you know, on the bleeding edge of the meta, but a lot of the folks that I play with, I should say not a lot of, some percentage of the folks that I play with want to play differently. And I try to shift gears to play how they want to play. Because and I'll say that because spending time with them is more important to me than necessarily winning or taking the most efficient list.
And that would be great. It would be nice if more people could approach the game that way.
When I'm going to the game store and I don't know some of those folks, all bets are off. I'm just kidding.
Talking about that, is that something you felt like you had to learn, Paul? Like those gears, how to pare down? Because exactly. I was about to say the same thing. Because I felt like it was something I needed to learn, and I wasn't always that way. Maybe there's a topic there.
Yeah, no, that's something that has been acquired. I don't want to say it's been like dulled by age or whatever, but it took years to come to grips with. Mm. Is that potentially who am I alienating because I'm wanting to play only one way every time?
Yeah.
And that might not matter because you may never want for a game or whatever. You know, but there's just, you know, there are times, you know, they're like, I have friends that maybe play one game every 3 years, you know, whatever. And that's, you know, or have no desire to ever go and win first place or don't care how it stacks up. They want to spend 3 or 4 hours just moving, doing something that they want to, a distraction, using the game for actual entertainment.
Well, I don't know. Is there something psychologically here read that, you know, relates to anything you know about?
So first of all, I'll say for the GW events, I'm really excited about the Crusade games that are going to be at the GW events. Right in the vein of what we're talking about, Crusade is an awesome model for 9th edition to be able to enjoy yourself. And I'm really looking forward to, if I can make it to one of the GW events, I would really like to participate in the Crusade events. Down to it, I mean, I've mentioned Air Guys and Rumsuck before, right? I mean, those German Prussian words for essentially glory mongering, right? Hankering for glory, greed for honor kind of deal. And I think that there's something to it when we're younger. And maybe you just haven't seen enough play out. I think some people are fortunate enough to start out at this point we're talking about. I think it's a learned thing for many others to understand that it's, you know, you mentioned the value of these events and being able to meet people and engage with one another. You know, we've talked about how like LVO in some cases is almost like a family reunion. And so many of these other opportunities that are provided by these events, it's really about enjoying the game with each other and not just about proving oneself at the expense of others' enjoyment, right? Because it ultimately is a game. It's not just it's not real warfare, right? You're not, the stakes aren't someone's lives and that kind of thing. And so when it comes to a war game, and don't get me wrong, there is something about a competitive aspect and truly, you know, playing it to the extent, playing it skillfully. But I do think that really at the core of this entire aspect, the community is just, that is the real meta. That is the real thing that folks should be kind of the eye on the prize for the long-term objective. You can still enjoy some of the competitive aspects to it. You can always push yourself to do that. But there's a point where you need to weigh out at what expense to the others is it. And so, not saying that just by being competitive that you're bullying people or that you're taking advantage of other people, but there are ways to go about it. And I think we've seen a lot of great people. I would say Richard Siegler is one out there that really knows how to play the game well and not at the expense of the other player. And I think we've seen that time and time again, actually. And so that's kind of where I think in this case, the whole psychological aspect of it being a game, nobody likes losing, right? It hurts to a point. It's almost like cognitive dissonance. But there are some people who do a lot better regard, something I've tried to work on too. I mean, especially with, I understand going into a game with, you know, three bloodthirsters, even prior to Psychic Awakening and everything that I mean, I had just as much of a chance of getting tabled as I did of maybe getting lucky enough to table someone else. Getting to the point where you can embrace that, and just be like, man, I'm just going to have fun. And I think Crusade does an awesome job of enabling that too. And so it's really great to see in 9th edition how that's come along. But that's a very long-winded answer to your question there, Adam. So I hope you appreciated it.
I did. And you've read long-winded? Nah, never.
I think with, you know, it may have sounded like we were kind of, I don't know, challenging or looking, you know, looking differently at competitive play, and that we're absolutely not, because I think what we're trying to highlight is that you can play this game with different objectives in mind and not just the objectives on the table.
That's right.
When was the penny drop moment for you, Paul? If you can think of it, when you realized there was a line that you no longer wanted to cross, which is the one where you kind of put your enjoyment ahead of your opponents.
So I think it was when I started to realize that, you know, I mentioned those friends, you know, that only play once every year or a couple of years or whatever. It's not that they were not trying to live in the hobby, is that they only found time to kind of get on the table to play a game. They were still collecting models, still reading the books, you know, painting and that kind of stuff. But, you know, and it took some time. Like they probably got to the point way before I did, but they weren't coming over to my place to get schooled. They were coming to spend an afternoon.
Yeah.
And I don't know when that hit. I'm not really sure, but it was definitely something. It was probably a little bit late coming, you know, for when I finally realized that. Because always, you know, I'm always trying to, always wanted to stay sharp, always wanted to be, you know, whatever, practicing for my next event. Like some, you know, it was always just the time in between the next tournament. Yeah. And that's one way and then realizing that's only one way to enjoy this game.
I had two really specific penny drop moments, now that I'm thinking about it. And both of them happened to me in fantasy. So there were quite a while before I really got deep into 40K.
Fantasy's a bloodbath. It's still everything. No casual games. I'm just kidding.
Well, fantasy, when there was a skill discrepancy in fantasy, it was savage. It was absolutely brutal. You'd have games where one opponent just wouldn't lose a model, and they'd completely decimate you just because their positioning, their maneuvering, their decisions to flee, to charge, to stand and shoot were just perfect. The first one came, I was playing at a little one dayer, and I was playing my ogres, and against my opponent was playing Empire, and he had like this huge knight, we used to call it a knight bus, so he had like four ranks of inner circle knights. Guy had Galmaraz, Calfranz. He had Calfranz in there. Calfranz was like the perfect ogre killing machine. And so I saw this list and I'm like, oh cool, we're gonna go head to head, we're gonna smash, he's probably gonna beat me because his army's got a lot of, you know, extra damage and stuff, and it's very resilient, very fast. So he's probably gonna get the charge on me, I'm gonna lose, it's gonna be fine, we'll go meet in the middle. We'll have a good time. And he proceeded to not leave his deployment zone. And he had the magic superiority, and he had a couple of shooting assets, and all he did was shoot two or three of my small units and then just throw little things in the way so my big stuff couldn't get to him, and he won by a bunch of points, and he never left his deployment zone. And I realized that was a level of gameplay that I wasn't ready for and that I didn't enjoy, because I was like, oh yeah, I'll run into the middle, he's going to charge me, we're going to go rah, 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 he's probably going to win, it's going to be fine. But instead, I had a very frustrating game where I got zero satisfaction out of it. For him, that was exactly what he wanted from that game, and he progressed and he ended up winning that event because he did the same thing to a couple of other opponents. Because from his point of view, he was like, well, I've got this big like pseudo Death Star that no one wants to come close to me because I'll just go out and kill them, so I'm just going to stand here and pepper and win by a couple of points. Like in today's environment of 9th edition, he would have won by like 15 to 20 points every game rather than risking losing by that much by going out and contesting the field. So that was when I realized there was a level I didn't enjoy. But then I found myself at that level later, when I was playing Ogres again, and I had done something similar. I had a bunch of small what we call chaff units. And in my case, there were a bunch of little saber-tooth tigers. I can't remember what they were called. And then a bunch of little Noblar units.
Come up,
for the ogres. Yep. And I had a bunch of those, and I used to go out and I just used to redirect people, chaff them. So you'd throw out a little one model unit right in front of their brick, and of course they can't charge through it. They have to charge into it, and then when they close the door, they like give you a flank for you to charge into on your next turn. And I did that to an opponent, and all I lost was like my four dogs and my Noblars, and I killed everything in his army. And he was like what you said, Paul. He was one of those gentlemen who plays very rarely and who wanted to play how I used to play, where we just run and we mash in the middle. And that guy told me he didn't enjoy playing me in that game. And a penny dropped. And I realized, oh, I need to enjoy playing the game like I used to again, so we can both leave this table satisfied. And I was able to do that. I was able to find that. I changed my list. I put just more meat-headed fun stuff in there, some Mournfangs, some little bits and pieces, some ogre bulls, and some man-eaters. I just mashed into the middle. We had a great time because that's what that gentleman was after. I didn't enjoy the game any less. I just enjoyed it for different reasons. Like, I got into the narrative. I got into the little bits of the little challenges, and I got into the gritty bloodbath rather than, you know, trying to activate every little iota of my tactical nuance. So yeah, hopefully that's I don't know, an example that resonates with others.
Well, I think it's one of those to where you, it is satisfying to put together a very efficient thing and then execute the combo. Like, it is. It's very satisfying to dream this up and then execute your plan to perfection. And I don't want to make it sound like that's something that people shouldn't do. But, you know, I think just being aware of, so we talked about this a little bit before, is that in some games, and I don't mean Warhammer 40,000 or Sigmar, but in just like tabletop games or board games or whatever, card games, there's a finite amount of fun to be had, and one player becomes consumed with absorbing all that fun to leave no fun for the other person.
The fun sponge.
And it is not what has to happen in this game. And I think just being aware of that sometimes just adds for more enjoyable experience across both sides of the table.
I feel like I am unique in that I straddle both sides. So, like, at my last tournament, it was just a one-dayer, and it was three rounds, and I lost my first round, and then I went into my second round, and I was playing somebody who was playing guard, right? And I got really excited because I don't think I had ever... I'd only played against one other person who played guard before. So I was like, oh, this is amazing. And it became very apparent that this person was new to guard. And like the first thing that they said was, man, I have all these command points and I don't know what I'll ever spend them on. I helped him spend his command points in that game. I was playing custodies, and like it became pretty apparent early on that, you know, I could have made it so that he had less fun, but I wanted him to have more fun. So yeah, I helped him spend his command points, and it was more of like a cooperative kind of experience, and that was actually one of the best games that I've had in months. So
that's mighty nice at a tournament to do that.
I had already lost. What, like, doesn't matter if I win or lose that game. Doesn't even matter how many points I win or lose that game by, you know?
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting topic. Thanks for leading us down that path. You know, we traveled a long way from, I think it's incredibly rewarding to get out to events and do this kind of stuff. But, you know, we still got to have fun while we're doing what we're doing.
So back to the original question. What's everyone working on?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still Ogres. Building those bases, by the way.
Yeah. What models?
Oh, the bases are done. I've got enough now for the whole army.
None of the bases. I want to know about the ogres. Jeez.
Oh. So I have a lot unpainted. So I actually, my very first wargaming love was Age of Sigmar back in like 2018. And ogres were my army then. And I painted 2,000 points, but it had allies in it and all that. So I actually took out all of my stuff that is assembled and not painted, and I have like a box of ogres as well that I like, you know, like the old, what do they call these, the battalion boxes from way back when. Mm-hmm. So I have one of those for ogre kingdoms, and I have like over 3,000 points to paint. So oof. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I know. This is my 2022 project now that I finished my custodies. So let's go.
Do it. I am building Eldari still. That's
Did you get your kit in the mail yet?
Which one?
Didn't you say you ordered something?
Swooping Hawks.
Get them yet?
I did. Yeah. And they're not painted yet, but they're all built, ready to go. And, you know, I have a bunch of Eldari from over the years. And I'm actually experimenting with like a couple of Falcons. Might not be a bad idea.
I do not think it's a bad idea at all. I think it's hard to have a bad idea with that book.
Okay, good point. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't want to sound like novel. Like, have you thought about warp spiders? Yeah, it turns out they're pretty good too, right?
Please warn people before you use a unit of 10 Swooping Hawks on anybody.
Hey, I don't know if you heard. I listen to a podcast. These are pretty strong. But you're all right. I was thinking about the Webway too. It's like... Well, actually, let's take a break, and we'll talk a little bit about some of this stuff. But yeah, thanks for that. I hope everybody enjoyed that segment. That was actually pretty interesting. At least interesting to talk about on our side. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, we are back. Hey, thanks for hanging out for the last segment. You know, we did go in a little bit of a jaunt sometimes, and we did it then too.
We've been jaunty lately.
Yeah.
That's okay. Look, you know, we're palate cleansers. You know, as we build models, get ready for the new tournament season coming up, really looking forward to getting out there and talking about some of these events and seeing the events. Support us on the Thursday show too, where we come over and talk about stuff, mostly tournaments. I'd say about 95% tournaments.
with 5 minutes of Fuego at the end.
Yeah.
Which this week is going to be, because it's happening on St. Patrick's Day. Is the Thursday show this week, so it's going to be all about the color green and the Irish heritage.
Oh, nice. I'm sure we can't go wrong there.
Definitely can't step wrong there. No one will be angry at the end of that segment.
But yeah, talking about tournaments and getting down and traveling, I think it's great that we can finally kind of feel a lot better about doing that, and certainly not trying to say that's the only way to play or get people to do something they're not comfortable doing, but you know, if they are able to do it, I hope they come out and see us at these events while we are also having fun doing them. So the Dipticon's coming up. A lot of other U.S. series events coming up. Seattle. I'm looking forward to being in Seattle. Cannot wait. Come join us. I'll be doing the talking about the events, not playing the events. But I'm also looking to get out to some events myself. I kind of miss it. I miss rolling the dice.
Me too.
With stakes on the line.
Man, I can't wait for Adepticon. I'm updating. Like, first event I've been to in a very long time has a paint rubric. And I was looking at some of my models and I'm like, oh, there's the stuff I painted when I had lots of time. And then there's the stuff I was just getting done for the sake of my sanity during the pandemic. That's a big difference between the two.
Your stuff's looking good though, man. I mean, you sent some pics, and I know you're like going back and doing that second or third pass on the miniatures, and that's okay. Actually, I do that routinely before events. I kind of look at what their rubric is and see, do I think I can max these points out? And if not, what do I need to do?
Well, that's exactly what I've done. I've just gone through it on a first pass and just been like, yeah, I'm not entirely happy with this bit. I'd like a better base coat on here. It really was. It was those two pandemic years. I had like so much I wanted to get painted, and I enjoy painting so much. And I went through about probably close to 6 month period where I was forcing myself to paint an hour a day. But I wasn't really caring about the end result. The painting was just to like keep my mind busy in my hands. And so, yeah, going back of like, I've got a bunch of stuff that's like base coated. Okay. And so, but that's good. That's a good place to be starting from. And when I just want to do like a bit of touch up work.
Yeah. Blocking in those colors is to me the biggest pain. Like I think my number one hobby chore is blocking in metals.
Metallics.
Yeah. And it's a close second is blocking in the base colors of everything else. But yeah, I enjoy the end result. And the journey sometimes can be tedious. So starting with some of that tedium already done, I think, yeah, why not?
For sure.
Anybody else working on stuff? I mean, I'm not sure when I will get to that point of when I know my list is 100% ready. I will say that my list is shifting right now with a new army. Our new codex is like, oh, I want to take that. Oh, I want to take that. And I want to take that. Do I really want that webway? Like, is the webway mandatory? Nothing's mandatory, of course. Yeah.
Nothing's mandatory. Like, there are some parts of that Eldari book, like, that are so potent. Like, the fast attack slot. You could just close your eyes and, like, point at fast attack options, and you're not going to get, there's no bad choice. There's like nothing. I'm actually, do you know something I'm a very big fan of, and it hurts me to say this because of what they did to me in 7th edition, but Windrider jet bikes, I think, like, I could see a Sam, is it Sam Hine? It's Sam Hine to me. Or is it Sam Hain? Whatever. Tomato, tomato.
So, Samhain is what it's based off of, but it's a made up word, you can say however you want.
Fantastic.
In the context of Eldari.
I was about to say.
Sorry.
Says the man that just made fun of me for saying Zed in the green room.
Oh,
no. Lay it on him.
What happens in the green room stays in the green room, Tanya.
Well, I'm going to let out all your secrets now.
All the secrets are coming out.
Oh.
This is scandalous.
Yeah, I'm
Happy
a huge
anniversary.
Fan of, huge fan of jet bikes. And I'm a huge fan of the Eldari book. I think there
what
are
about
some things...
The sniper jet bikes?
I'm not sure I get them. I'm not sure I get what they do above and beyond a regular bike. I love the model though. The model is cool. Like, like, yeah.
No, I'm talking about just pure functionality, you know.
What slot are they in? Are they fast attack as well? For some reason I thought they have heavy support.
They're not heavy support.
Good. That'd be really weird. But yeah.
It's missile launchers, whatever.
But yeah, I feel like they have an awkward... I mean, in Samhain, they probably make the most sense, but I feel like they've got a bit of an awkward position where they're... It's an ultra-mobile army already, so you've got a super-ultra-mobile unit that, I mean, has a relatively high price point and large footprint for being a sniper unit. And in a sniper unit, I feel like you want it to be quick, you want it to be agile, but you don't want it to get seen when you don't want it to get seen. You don't want to get picked off, you know, out of hand. It just seems a bit awkward. It seems like they don't do a hell of a lot of damage either. But what I think is really cool about snipers for Eldari is the fate dice. You just have sixes sitting there to be ready to be used for a wound roll. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, eat these mortals. So I like them in the sense that they can... So, you know, terrain, if you're using certain terrain sets, being able to put people out of line of sight or characters out of line of sight is a possibility. So the extra movement allows you to, you know, scoot up and snipe out some of those auras where they would normally be hidden for a round or two as you're trying to move in position.
I mean, they get a 2+. It specifically states they get cover as if they're infantry, as in light cover. So they can sit with a 2+ save in cover. That's pretty nice. And then they select one unit within 12 inches until the end of that phase each time an outcast unit from your army makes an attack against the enemy with their blah blah blah. They don't receive cover. Okay, so if you're within 12, you can turn off other people's cover. I don't hate them. I just feel like they're in like the oversaturated slot.
Yeah, like a B tier in a codex full of A's.
A's. That's pretty much how I feel about it.
That's okay. Yeah, just curious. Are you talking about playing, you know, all jet bikes?
Yeah. I mean, if you're playing all jet bikes, take them because they're cool.
Well, they are cool. And I do like how they're putting pressure on character models, like basically keeping people honest with character models.
Yeah, when you can just have those sixes looming, it's so... It can be oppressive.
You can accomplish much of the same with just Rangers, though. And I do think, you know, we did that whole segment on, like, what is the best core troop or whatever. And I just keep getting drawn to the Rangers.
I think it probably is Rangers, mostly because they'll just get you points, whereas Guardians feel like, well, because the Rangers forward deploy and they can deep strike or just on their data sheet. You don't need to do anything to just do that. They can just go and get you those engage points, mm-hmm. those R&D points, investigate signals, etc. And so they just become a freeing thing. Whereas I feel like if you play Guardians, you want to use them. You want to try and kill stuff with them. You want to try and put pressure on with stuff. And I think you've got better options for that.
It just feels good to roll a lot of dice, and the Shuriken Catapults roll a lot of dice.
Well, it's just that, you know, Guardians are now playing in a world of Aspect Warriors. It's the time of the Aspect Warriors. You don't want to be a Guardian, you know. You brought a Guardian to a Dire Avenger fight, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm with you. And I know we talked a lot about, you know, but I see Eldar the last couple of episodes. But the reason I like Rangers is because you are dictating what your opponent can do and what they do in the first couple of turns of the game. You know, they can only deploy in certain... You're locking out... You're giving yourself time to maneuver, potentially, unless your opponent really outplays you, which is also very possible.
It's true. I do feel like there's some stuff in the Eldari book that gives me pause. So, all right. I'm going to tell you the narrative of 9th edition through Adam's lens.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's going to be great, isn't it, Red? Strap yourselves in. So, start at 9th edition, codexes start coming out, and they've got a new level of deadliness in them. Like, not initially. Initially, it was stuff like Death Guard and Dark Angels, which were more resilience-based than speed-based, but then we had Drakari and Admech chucked into the mix, and all of a sudden, we needed more terrain on the table, otherwise as people didn't get to play the game. There were actually quite a few Space Marine lists that were doing this to people. There was Ultramarine lists, some Iron Hands lists that were literally just, I went first, and it's a bowling ball table. You've lost the game. It's over. So we made more and more density on the table. We got more and more terrain. We made our tables look better in the process, which I don't think was a bad thing. But then what we did by the byproduct of this is we over-incentivized non-interactive play, as in the person who can do the least amount of things whilst getting points was deemed to be the person who was playing the game right or was having more success. And that created its own little spiral. We ended up having a bunch of lists that we called the you know, rabbit ears bus stop lists because they just sort of stood in their deployment zone and got like 80 points.
Did you say then, rabbit ears bus stop list?
I'm making quotation masks.
Just following along.
And so then the byproduct of that was to be able to sit in your deployment zone while doing very little, a la a bus stop, whilst interacting with your opponent, which led us into no line of sight shooting, which seems to be the predominant thing that makes or breaks a top tier list.
It's definitely what's up right now.
Can you cram in some
nice banner type effects?
Airbursts and SMS from Tau. If you have a good density of no line of sight shooting, your army is just better. Hive Guard was another great example. Hive Guard literally was propping up the entire Hive Mind faction, all of them, because of how potent they could be, double shooting with all these extra explodings and rerolls and such. And so now at this point where I feel like we need to have some caveat on if you've got a gun that doesn't need line of sight to shoot somebody, there should be a penalty when you can't see somebody. Like there should be a -1 to hit or a -1 to wound, or your opponent always gets the benefit of cover because you can't see them. There needs to be something like that, because I feel like it's too good. It's too powerful. We've made the table so dense that this is so over incentivized, and it's meaning that the terrain doesn't matter anymore when we have it there to even the playing field.
Do you not think that it's like a list design reward or choice that players are opting towards this, and they should be rewarded, should be incentivized with more wins because they have made these design choices that are good for what the state of the game is right now?
Absolutely. Nothing wrong with that. But I feel like as long as the tables stay as dense as they are, which they most likely will, I can't see us taking terrain off the tables, these things will always be the best ways to play the game. And I don't like there being one best way to play the game. I never like that idea that there's always one thing that means. And there's a lot of codexes you don't get access to such density. Like, I mean, you know, I've got my hands together looking up right now. Guard, please. Space Marines have very little no line of sight shooting. We know the Nerf Thunderfire cannon's got, well deserved. Other factions, I mean, Harlequins don't have access to it. They bridge the gap in other ways. But there are a huge amount of factions that have very little or very limited access to no line of sight shooting. Chaos Space Marines being case in point. You have to go to Forge World to a Rapier battery or a quad launcher in order to get that. A lot of people aren't willing to do that, or they can't afford the Forge World prices or whatnot.
A little bit of the tax, the premium on that stuff.
Exactly, and we're talking about apples and oranges here, but so not all line of sight shooting is made the same. I mean, I have a Manticore, which I can make a full payload Manticore, which went up in points, by the way, because you know they know this is a very good platform, this is a very good weapon. But you compare that to the Thunderfire cannon, which used to be the mainstay artillery piece for Space Marine armies, and now is much maligned. It doesn't really do anything. And
so good for a while there.
They were phenomenal. they were too good. And they're paying their penance at the moment in the naughty corner. But you know, not all these things are created equal. And so it's just a bit of the armies at the top will stay at the top as long as they have ways to play the game that are obviously superior to others. And I'd like to see, you know, OGDubs done a great job of letting most books play in various different ways. One of those being in 9th edition, I've noticed that just about every single army has an ability to play a horde-esque army. You know, everybody has a 20-man woman Xenos unit to wield in a game. 20 battle sisters, 20 crew, 20 witches or cabalites or whatever. Everyone has the ability to field 20, a unit of 20-something, which I think's a phenomenal thing for the breadth of the game and lists and armies. But yet, this paradigm at the top where if I can just take all this stuff, I mean, Night Spinners are a great example, Paul, because they'll be your to the last options as well. They'll sit and protect home objectives.
They're 160 points or so more expensive than any one specific unit, especially if you're taking five-man aspect warriors.
And they'll constantly interact and take a pound of flesh from your opponent whilst scoring you objectives, getting you points at the end of the game, and being quite easy to keep safe because they'll get out of dodge. They'll go 14 inches and then battle focus in whatever direction when they need to.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And there's no downside to taking them is what it seems like.
Yeah, exactly right.
But that's a good – when you're looking at codexes and what to pick, though, like in your army list, when you're especially going for just the competitive side, you look at those X-factor things, which – happens to be indirect fire right now. It is hot, and if you have an arm, even if you're playing what some may consider to be a B tier codex or list or whatever, you know, you still want to look at what your options are that are hot in the game right now, such as ignoring line of sight.
Spot on.
You know, I guess what I do every time, you know, get folks writing in and asking, yeah, how can I make sense of this list or that list or this codex or to compete? And you kind of look at what is available to them. And if you have indirect fire, even if it is not the most efficient point indirect fire, you still need to consider it for your list. And how many times do we see this with weapon platform or batteries or whatever that were not considered ideal choices until people start winning games with them?
Yeah, it was really choices? When...
More points than what you think. You know, the points outweighed what you thought they performed, but yet, you know, they would help you actually get advantages, score objectives, score points during the games.
Exactly right. It wasn't really until we hit a point of density on tables where you could expect that you would rock up to, let's say, a table at especially a Games Workshop event. They were great at pioneering this, where you could hide 80% of your army in your deployment zone and have some confidence you weren't going to get slapped around. But then, like, I mean, game is going to game. The natural progression was to be like, well, let's make that terrain not matter anymore,
yeah,
and just take artillery bases. And it's the natural progression, but I feel like Tau, the one that really made it not so much a problem, but noticeable that there was this other level that some armies got to go to, because they just I get the benefits of terrain, but you don't, you know? I get all the benefits, you can't see me, but all the terrain you're deployed behind, none of it matters, because I can see you and shoot you regardless. When we got to that level, I was like, maybe there needs to be a thing here. Like, a little caveat.
What kind of caveat?
Well, it could be a lot of things. There was a bunch of stuff I remember in 5th edition, 6th edition, you know, when you couldn't see your target, you didn't get to minus your ballistic skill from the scatter dice when you're using a template. That's correct, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's right.
That was an aspect, yes.
So maybe something like that. You can't see your target, you can't see the thing you're shooting at, well, you don't hit them as good. Maybe you can't reroll. Or maybe if you get to reroll, you only get to reroll ones instead of rerolling everything, or something of that nature.
I think some universal, like, just yeah. I don't say universal special rule because we don't do that anymore. But you know,
no, we don't.
But some acknowledgement of if you're firing in these conditions, then this happens.
Yeah, I'd be very happy to see that. So maybe it's just as simple as a minus one to hit. I know that's very easy to circumnavigate for some armies. The case in point, Tau, you know, just get a marker light over there and I'll ignore all the deficits again.
Well, and we're talking about wishlisting stuff right now. It's like, I don't even know
that
this is required. I think that, it's a little bit cyclical, is that as the preponderance of indirect fire, you know, works its way into the game, there'll be something will evolve and, you know, we'll make it less of an ideal choice, and then the circle of life begins anew.
Gamers will continue to game.
Yeah.
It's probably obvious.
Yes, I don't know. I don't know that we need to solve for it other than...
I think it's just something I'd like people to be aware of, like that there is this thing going on. Take it into account when you're building your list. If it's a thing that you can do as well, go for it. More power to you.
Yeah, I like it. It's when I'm going through, and we talk about it a lot on the show, it's like, man, just how powerful things that get around the rules are.
Yeah.
As people are, you know, trying to crack this nut, deciding what they're going to come into the next season with.
Yeah, be aware of what you're going to say. Tune into the Thursday show. Hey.
Yeah, well, there's cheap plug.
Seamless.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, that's me. It's professionalism in action right there.
Look, we got to cross-pollinate sometimes.
It's true.
Castellan Robots. Where's the first time you ever heard about Castellan Robots?
Right here, probably.
Right here. What finally won a tournament?
Castellan Robots. We talked about a list on the Thursday show last week of a gentleman in Scotland, and we were like, that list is going to win. It's got like, what did he have, 10? I think he had 2 units of 5, and he won it.
Fair enough. That's a good point. That's a win to close the show out on, is that, look at this. You do occasionally from this ramble get some tips and interesting things to incorporate into your list. Yeah, let's hear about it. Look, if anybody's doing something interesting or building something cool, let's hear about it. Let us know over the course of the next couple of weeks. As we move into Adepticon, I hope to get a show out still every week. But if not, you'll just have to tune in and listen to some of the broadcasts coming in over the weekend. We'll certainly try to tweet some stuff out or whatever, let you know what we're doing. And then, certainly I'll let you know what's happening at events over the next couple of weeks for the live show that we do. And you don't want to add anything before we wrap up?
We don't get it. Yeah, if we don't get an opportunity to talk to everybody next week, we'll see him at Adepticon for sure. Looking forward to it.
Can't wait to see you there.
Take a balloon and put my face on it, please.
It's happening.
Thank you.
Good night, something everybody.
Like see ya.
Scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.